right. Thank you, Stephen. So we are studying the book of Ecclesiastes, and we're in chapter 2. We're in our second lesson. And, you know, what we found in the first part of the book, we talked about Solomon and his background. We talked about, you know, what he was going through and why he wrote the book. And really, what you see in the whole discussion of the book is, you know, what matters? What's important? What really matters in this life? And we're going to get into the details this time because, he, you know, remember I said that it was kind of laid out sort of like a research paper where he says, this is what I'm going to go do, and then I'm going to run a bunch of experiments to see what the results are, and then I'm going to draw some conclusions from the results. And then I'm going to talk about what does that mean for me in my life and for everybody else. And so it's a very organized and very reasoned kind of document. And it's all of one piece. You know, it's definitely one set of thoughts that have been all written down at the same time and in the same thing. And we notice that in the end of chapter 1, to give us context for chapter 2, he says, starting in verse 12, I the preacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem, and I set my heart to seek and search out wisdom, by wisdom, concerning all that is done under heaven. And he says, you know, what is the profit of it? What is it worth? And then he says, I've looked at all this stuff, and I've gained much wisdom. And then at the end of the chapter, it says, for in much wisdom is much grief, and he who increases knowledge increases sorrow. And you might think, well, wow, what did he experience? Well, he's going to tell you now in chapter 2. Chapter 2, really, the whole chapter is his experiments and his initial results. And it covers a lot of stuff. So I'm going to go ahead and read all of chapter 2, and then we're going to dive into it. So this is Ecclesiastes chapter 2, starting in verse 1. I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with mirth. Therefore, enjoy pleasure. But surely this also was vanity. I said of laughter, madness, and of mirth, what does it accomplish? I searched in my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly, till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives. I made myself great works, built myself houses, and planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards. I planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made myself water pools from which to water the growing trees of the grove. I acquired male and female servants and had servants born in my house. Yes, I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all who were in Jerusalem before me. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and the special treasures of kings and of the provinces. I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds. So I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. Also, my wisdom remained with me. Whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them. I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure, for my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward for all my labor. Then I looked on all the works my hands had done, and on all the labor in which I had toiled. And indeed, all was vanity, and grasping for the wind. There is no profit under the sun. Then I turned myself to consider wisdom and madness and folly. For what can a man do who succeeds the king? Only what he has already done. Then I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness. The wise man's eyes are in his head, but the fool walks in darkness. Yet I myself perceived that the same event happens to them all. So I said in my heart, as it happens to the fool, it also happens to me. And why then was I more wise? Then I said in my heart, this also is vanity. For there is no more remembrance of the wise than the fool forever, since all that is now is will be forgotten in the days to come. And how does the wise man die? As the fool. Therefore I hated life, because of the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me, for all is vanity and grasping for the wind. Then I hated all the labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me, and who knows whether he will be wise or a fool. Yet he will rule over all my labor in which I toiled and in which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. Therefore I turned my heart and despaired of all the labor in which I toiled under the sun. For there is a man whose labor is with wisdom, knowledge, and skill, yet he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. This also is vanity and a great evil. For what has man for all his labor and for striving of his heart, which he has toiled under the sun? For all his days are sorrowful and his work burdensome. Even in the night his heart takes no rest. This also is vanity. Nothing is better for a man than that he should eat and drink and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. For who can eat or who can have enjoyment more than I? For God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to a man who is good in his sight. But to the sinner he gives the work of gathering and collecting, that he may give to him who is good before God. This also is vanity and grasping for the wind. Okay. So you kind of get the whole picture here. He tries everything he can imagine to find happiness. And at the end, he looks at it all and he says, it's empty. It's meaningless. It's worthless. It's useless. And part of what you see here that really opens up the really most of the book of Ecclesiastes is, remember we said before that Solomon in the book of Ecclesiastes doesn't talk about eternity. You know, he talks about the here and now. In fact, in verse, verse 3 of this chapter, he says, I search my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom, and how to lay hold on folly till I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives. You see that focus on earthly life? And so really that's his focus in the book. And, you know, he's saying, so what's worth doing while you're alive? He's not talking about eternity. And you really see that in the Old Testament. You really don't see a strong bunch of writings about eternal life or heaven or things like that. What you hear about is, you know, they do talk about life after death. They do talk about resurrection just barely. But basically they say that, you know, we all die, we all go to the grave, and we all rest. And then it says, like Daniel was told, you know, that you will rise in the last day. And so there's this notion of kind of rising to judgment, but this notion of an eternal home with God, being face to face and things like that, and in the tree of life again, and all the wonderful things we read about in the end of the book of Revelation, for instance, and are talked about in the New Testament, are really not in view, and definitely not in view for Solomon. So here we have Solomon. Let's start back in verse 1. And he said, so I said in my heart. Yes, please.
One thing I note is that in the New Testament, there are a lot of things that they seem to know, that they seem to already have some idea of. For instance, God is a God of the living, not the dead. Jesus expected them right to know that. At the same time, we see that Mary and Martha, they knew about the resurrection. That the resurrection, that was something that they knew about. So they did know, they did have some idea, and they were expected, it might not be explicitly stated in the Old Testament as we might think it should be,
right,
but there is a conclusion that one can draw given what is there. And a lot of that is a right conclusion because Jesus confirms that.
Right. And that's true. It's not like they were completely ignorant of the concept of life after death. In fact, they knew there was for those very reasons. And there were things like, I remember Gabriel in the book of Daniel tells that to Daniel, right? He says, you will rest with your fathers. He said, go your way, Daniel. You'll rest with your fathers and you will stand in your allotment at the end of the days, right? You will. So there was this notion about some sort of eternal life with God. But when you think about how much we as Christians think about and talk about it, you know, you don't see that same kind of weight put on it in the Old Testament. Just like that song we just said, this world is not my home, I'm just passing through. I mean, that's actually taken from what Abraham said, right? Because it says that, you know, he said, I'm a stranger in this land. I'm looking for a home whose builder and maker is God. So it isn't that the idea wasn't there, But as much as we focus and think about eternal life in heaven, and especially when you compare it with what Solomon talks about in Ecclesiastes, because the reason he gets so depressed is that he says, what's good in life? We're all going to die. You know, that's basically what he says. And he doesn't say doing good in this life, you know, prepares me for eternity with God or something. He does say that it's our job to you know, keep the commandments, right? To obey God, and it's our whole duty. But you really see this earthly, temporal focus of this earthly life in what Solomon talks about. And that was really the comparison. So it's not like it's not there, that the concepts aren't there in the Old Testament. They're just not very strongly worded and maybe not very clear. I think they were surprised when Jesus came and reminded them of some of that. They kind of knew about it, but you know, it was just kind of there. Okay, so in my heart, I said in my heart, come now, I will test you with mirth, therefore enjoy pleasure. And so here's Solomon setting out his first experiment. He says, okay, I want to see what's good for someone to do in their life. So I'm going to try pleasure. And he says, I set up laughter and mirth. You know, he's wanting to find out what's worthwhile. So these words in the Hebrew, mirth typically talks about like joy or glee. And the word pleasure here is like delight or goodness or good things. It all kinds of carries this notion of kind of immediate happiness, you know, like an emotional response. And if we wanted to look at it, we might say this is sort of like comedy. In fact, later on he says, I want to try out folly, wisdom and folly. Folly there, that word is basically silliness, might be a good translation of it. And so he says, I'm going to try things that make me happy, that make me laugh. And I'm going to try things that gratify my desires. You know, in verse 3, he says, I searched my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine. You know, so he's really going after every possible way that somebody would say, well, this is good to do. This is enjoyable. This is pleasurable. Not that it's righteous necessarily, but he's just focused on finding out what's good. So he starts out, he says, I'm going to test you with mirth and enjoy pleasure. And then he says, but surely this also was vanity. He said, I tried it. It didn't work. And I said, man, laughter is just, you know, just laughing all the time. That's just crazy. And of mirth, you know, of being gleeful or happy, he says, what does it accomplish? And there you see that little hint, you know, when he said before about what does it profit a man? This what does it accomplish is really similar. It's saying, well, sure, I enjoyed it while a guy told a joke and I laughed, had a big belly laugh. You know, I enjoyed that. But then it was over. What did it accomplish? It was temporal. It was temporary. It was transient. It faded away. It wasn't lasting. It wasn't a lasting, profitable thing. And that through the book is what Solomon is searching for. What is meaningful and important on the long term? In verse 3, it said, I searched my heart how to gratify my flesh with wine while guiding my heart with wisdom. And how to lay hold on folly. So notice how to gratify myself, how to lay hold on folly. He is intellectually saying, how am I going to set up my experiments? How am I going to, he says, while guiding my heart with wisdom. He's using the wisdom that God gave him to think this through and say, now, how am I going to go find this? How am I going to go experience it? You know, he talks about gratifying his flesh with wine. I mean, that means he's going to drink enough wine that he's going to feel it. That's for sure. I don't really think what he's talking about, and I think, Stephen, you may have mentioned this at some point in one of your lessons recently. I remember something to the effect that he's not really talking about, you know, just being drunk. He's talking about having enough wine and alcohol such that you were feeling, you know, you were feeling a buzz. You were feeling pleasant about it. But one way or the other, he said, I'm not just losing control here. I'm guiding my heart with wisdom. This is an intentional thing he's doing to try to figure out what's important. And again, he says that I might see what was good for the sons of men to do under heaven all the days of their lives. So then he launches in verse 4 into his kind of litany, his resume of all the stuff he did. And this is one of the great pieces of evidence that Solomon wrote this late in his life, just because of all the things that he's gotten done here. So he says, I made my works great. I built myself houses. I planted myself vineyards. I made myself gardens and orchards. I planted all kinds of trees in them. I made for myself water pools from which to water the growing trees. Now, if I just stopped right there, that's years and years, probably decades and decades of work that he's talking about. So, you know, he's talking about spending the prime of his life, the 40 years that he was king, probably several decades building and building and building and building and building greater and greater things. And we can see this if we look at the Kings and Chronicles, you know, the histories in the Bible. It talks about the things that Solomon made and all the different, you know, he went and got a whole bunch of horses and had a lot of chariots, and he built up this city for this purpose and this city for this purpose, and he bought ships and went off looking for gold in India or sent people off to look for it. And he did all kinds of different things. And he was just any kind of great accomplishment. You know, if we looked at this today, we would say this is somebody like, you know, like Elon Musk or Jeff Bezos or you know, somebody like that, a great entrepreneur that just went out and did everything they could imagine, went and built things, just like today. You know, we'll build rocket ships and we'll build subways under Los Angeles and we'll build electric cars that drive themselves and we'll do this and we'll do that and we'll do this. Right. Lots and lots of accomplishment. And it says that he enjoyed it. You know, he enjoyed it while he was doing it. But at the end, he says, what does it mean? Now, in verse 7, he starts a different thought. He says, I acquired male and female servants. I had servants born in my house. Yes, and I had greater possessions of herds and flocks than all those who were in Jerusalem before me. I also gathered for myself silver and gold and special treasures of kings of the provinces. And then he talks about male and female singers. I'm going to leave that one. But here he's talking about just possessions and wealth. So first he went off and built all kinds of great things. He went out and constructed stuff and built stuff like crazy. Anything he could imagine, he went and built it. Then he went and got all the kind of wealth that he could possibly get. And he, of course, all those things, I'm sure he used some of that wealth to pay for some of his great buildings. But you see this notion of, is it in things I've constructed with my hands? Is it in all my possessions and all my wealth? And then he says in verse 8, the latter part of verse 8, I acquired male and female singers, the delights of the sons of men, and musical instruments of all kinds. He went after entertainment. He said, I'm gonna just find every kind of, you know, singers, choirs, bands. I want lots of music. I want lots of entertainment. And I'm going to see if that does it. You know, if you haven't already noticed the parallels to today's life and our lives, you know, what do people seek after? What do they spend their time on? And this is a really good measure. You know, when you think what Solomon did in these just few four verses, you're talking about 40 years of work and all the stuff he did in his 40 years. When you think about the time you spend, what do you spend your time on? You know, that's a measure of what you find important. And, you know, some people like to sit around and listen to music all day. You know, some people, we used to watch TV all the time. We don't do so much anymore. Now we're on the internet all the time. But, you know, we do all kinds of different things like that. And you can ask yourself, how important is this to me? And then you can go measure the time you spend on it and see if those two things jive together. Right? If you say God is the most important thing to me, and yet you only spend 2 or 3 hours a week thinking about God, then you probably need to reevaluate your priorities, because you're probably not being honest with yourself. You know, part of what we do, and this is kind of one of the things that Solomon's saying, is what is it worthwhile for us to do in our lives? And he eventually ends up saying, none of this stuff matters if you don't have purpose beyond life. And that's kind of where he's headed. Now, the other thing I thought was interesting, verse 9 is kind of the last one he says here, is, so I became great and excelled more than all who were before me in Jerusalem. And he says, also my wisdom remained with me. He was still being wise in what he was doing. But he said, I became great. I became great and powerful and famous, and I excelled everybody. I was the top dog. I was the richest man in the world. I was the most powerful man. I had everything I wanted. Now, did you notice the one thing in verse 4 all the way to verse 9? I made myself. I built myself. I planted for myself. I made myself. I made myself this. I made myself that. I acquired. I had great possessions. I gathered. I acquired, I became great. What's his focus? His focus is on himself. And one of the things that's completely missing in this part, in his experiment, was doing good for others. And that's a really important thing to look at to get an insight in the book of Ecclesiastes. There's nothing in here about doing good for others. And there's a lot, you know, you think about the kind of things you do when you have a hobby or you have a job or you have a career or whatever it is, and you work real hard to achieve something. You know, you can have enjoyment in that achievement, but it's nothing like the enjoyment of giving for others and doing good to others. There's a deep peace and joy in doing that that can't be matched by an earthly, worldly kind of success. And that's one of the things I noticed here that was really missing. So verse 10, he says, whatever my eyes desired, I did not keep from them, and I did not withhold my heart from any pleasure. He didn't have any limits. You know, he did everything his wisdom would allow him to do, but he said, it's not like I really want something and I didn't have it. I had everything. I had it all. Everything you could imagine, I had it and more. He even says that a little more later. He says, who can do more than me? Nobody can. But notice what he says at the latter part of verse 10. For my heart rejoiced in all my labor, and this was my reward from all my labor. Now, that seems kind of strange because he says his heart's rejoicing. What did he say? I'm going to set out to figure out pleasure. And he says, hey, my heart's rejoicing. That sounds like he succeeded, right? But notice what he says, the very next verse. Then I looked on all the works my hands had done and all the labor in which I had toiled, and indeed all was vanity. And grasping for the wind, there was no profit under the sun. See, Solomon isn't saying that you can't have enjoyment in life and that these things that you do, building things and acquiring things and entertainment and comedy and all these other things aren't pleasurable and that you can't enjoy them. But what he's saying is, in the end, they don't deliver. They're temporary. There's no lasting reward in them. There's no profit. And so you really have, this is why you have to keep the book of Ecclesiastes in context. Because there are times when if you take some of these statements out of context, you say, hold on a second. He just said he rejoiced in all of his labor. And then he said, hey, all of this is worthless and meaningless and vain. Now, what you're going to see here, and you're going to see it in the rest of chapter 2 a little bit, is he starts laying out something that he talks about a couple more times in the book, that it is the gift of God to man to enjoy his life here on earth, to enjoy his work, to enjoy his labor, the fruit of his efforts, and to have that kind of enjoyment. And he talks about people who work so hard and try so hard to acquire stuff, and they never enjoy it. And he says that's a great evil. So there's an aspect of how to live. It isn't just what matters in the end. That's a big part of what Solomon is talking about. It's what matters in the end of life. But he also talks about how do you live your life day by day? Do you find meaning in it? Can you enjoy your life day by day? And, you know, if it's not for the end, then how do you deal with it in between? So what we saw here was all the things that Solomon tried. Comedy, great works, possessions, riches, entertainment, greatness, being famous and more powerful than anybody else, and every single pleasure that you can imagine. But he says it's meaningless. There's no purpose to it. It's just temporary. So now verse 12, he is kind of a bit of a transition because now he starts bringing out the thing he realizes. And you'll see what he says. Then I turned myself. So whatever he was doing now, he says, I'm going to go consider other things. I've run that first experiment, and I'm going to do this other. Then I turned myself to consider wisdom and madness and folly. For what can a man do who succeeds the king? Only what he has already done. He says, I've already done everything. No one can do more than me. All those things I mentioned before, I've maxed it out. Every possibility of pleasure and wealth. So what's left? And he says, okay, let's look at wisdom and madness and folly. Remember, folly is silliness. But he says in verse 13, then I saw that wisdom excels folly as light excels darkness, right? And he says in verse 14, the wise man's eyes are in his head. In other words, he can see, but the fool walks in darkness. In other words, he's blind. And he says, yes, there is value in wisdom, and wisdom is greater than folly. And the wise man is able to see while the fool is blind and walks in darkness. But then he says in the latter part of verse 14, yet I myself perceived that the same event happens to them all. And that event he's talking about is death. And this is the thing that really bums Solomon out in Ecclesiastes. He really starts thinking about mortality and that how this life, no matter what happens in it, is going to be over. And we're all in the same boat at that point. We're all dead. And so he said in my heart in verse 15, as it happens to the fool, it also happens to me. And why was I then more wise? He says, hold it. I've worked really hard to be wise, and I've done all this stuff. You know, I built stuff, and I've had great experiences. I've got all this wealth and power, and I'm so wise. And he says, but hold it. I'm going to get the same out of it the fool does. We're all going to die. Nothing matters. Nothing lasts. See, that's what he means when he says, then I said in my heart, this also is vanity. In verse 16, he says, for there is no more remembrance of the wise man than of the fool forever, since all that is now is will be forgotten in the days to come. And how does a wise man die? As the fool, or just like the fool, they all die. So this is a really big realization of Solomon. And this is actually something that happens in people's lives. You know, Solomon became king as a fairly young man, and he went on for 40 years as king. But, you know, one of the jokes, especially older people, and a lot of us I know are older people, and, you know, we can all say the same thing. You know, 20-year-olds think they're never going to die, right? They think they're immortal and they're never going to die. And they act like it. You know, sometimes they do some stuff that doesn't make a lot of sense. It's really risky behavior, et cetera. And as people get older, their mortality starts becoming more real to them. And especially those of us who are a lot older and not as healthy, right? Mortality is really visible to us. You know, we know we're going to die one of these days. And it may be sooner than later. And of course, we're in the middle of this virus, and all people are worried about that. And, you know, some of us are dealing with serious long-term diseases and cancers and various things. And for those people, mortality is a very stark reality that they have to really seriously consider. But really, this is kind of a discovery that Solomon makes in his life. And he's kind of writing about, you know, this is sort of a memoir in a way. He says, you know, I tried when I was young, I tried everything I could think of to try to figure out what was worthwhile. I had all these great riches, I had all this pleasure, etc. And then he goes, but wow, I'm going to die. And when I die, who's going to get everything I worked for? I don't know. It could be anybody. It could be a fool. Then he's going to get the benefit of everything I did, and I'm dead. You know, this is the thing that really starts bugging Solomon. And you'll see this as he goes through it. Mortality is the great equalizer, right? It makes everybody, you know, it's one of those, kind of the opposite of the great equalizer being death is the resurrection. You look at the great white throne judgment scene, the end of book of Revelation, and what does it say? And I saw all men, small and great, stand before the throne of God, and books were open, right? It doesn't say, okay, there were the special folks over here, and there were the rich folks over here, there were the poor folks over here, there were the mean folks and the evil folks over here. Nope, all men standing before God, and books were opened. It's all equal. We're all going to stand before the judgment of God, and we're all going to be judged the same way. And God's not going to play favorites. You know, the beauty of it is that he did give us the book of life and an opportunity to be saved. And that's what's going to give us our opportunity to stand in that day. So, verse 17. So this gets to his, now he's had this epiphany that I'm going to die and none of these things really bring me happiness. Here's how he reacts. Verse 17. Therefore, I hated life because the work that was done under the sun was distressing to me for all his vanity and grasping for wind. Then I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun. because I must leave it to a man who will come after me, and who knows if he'll be wise or a fool. Yet he will rule over all my labor in which I toiled, and in which I've shown myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. Therefore I turned my heart and despaired of all the labor which I'd toiled under the sun. Did you see the progression? I hated life because of the work I had done. I hated all my labor, everything that I had actually done or built. I hated that, and then I turned my heart and despaired. You know, he is really getting in a hole. He's looking at this and saying, man, this is miserable. You know, I was out trying to find what was worthwhile, and what am I seeing? It's all meaningless, empty, purposeless. What good is
that? We also tend to see that he had a right to, because when we look at what happens with Rehoboam, his son, the one who does inherit it all, you know, he loses the kingdom.
Right. You're right. He blows it.
Yeah. Right. He loses it. He's foolish with it in 1 Kings chapter 12. And so, so he has every right to be worried about that, because he doesn't know who the kind of man Rehoboam was, even though he was, I think, 40, 41 when maybe he did know, and he knew that, that my son Rehoboam is going to take, he's going to be the king. And yet he's 41 and doesn't know this, that, or the other. So maybe he already knew about that.
So I'm going to try to wrap up here, this chapter. There's a little more left, but I know we're starting to run a little late here. So I'm going to move on through. He's sitting here just being really down about his labor. First of all, he says what? He says, who's going to get it when I'm dead? Right? How do I know? I have no control over it. And he says, verse 21, for there is a man whose labor is with wisdom, knowledge, and skill. So that's like Solomon. But he must leave his heritage to a man who has not labored for it. This is also his vanity and a great evil. This is kind of the ancient way of saying you can't take it with you. Right? All these people who are so wealthy, guess what? When they're dead, they don't get to take any of it with them. Verse 22, for what has man for all of his labor and for the striving of his heart, which he has toiled under the sun? For all his days are sorrowful and his work burdensome, and even in the night his heart takes no rest. This also is vanity. This is an example of you know, if we put a word on this today, we'd call it a workaholic, right? All his work, his days are sorrowful, his work burdensome, and in the night he doesn't even rest. He's so focused on acquiring stuff and seeking out wealth and pleasure and power, and he doesn't enjoy it. Notice verse 24, though, nothing is better for a man than he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. This also I saw was from the hand of God. For who can eat or who can have enjoyment more than I? For God gives wisdom and knowledge and joy to the man who is good in his sight. But to the sinner he gives the work of gathering and collecting, that he may give to him who is good before God. This is vanity and grasping for the wind. But notice what he says. He started talking about the workaholic up here, right? Who's tried to do it all himself. And then he says, that person is basically just gathering it up to give it to someone else when he dies. But then he says, God's purpose for man, one of God's major purposes for man, is to enjoy his life. Now, that doesn't mean, you know, to the extent of not obeying God, of course. But notice what he says. There's nothing better for man than he should eat and drink, and that his soul should enjoy good in his labor. To enjoy what you do is a great blessing. It's a gift of God to enjoy your days and to enjoy your work. And to work without enjoyment is miserable. I know there have been times in my life I've had jobs where I had to just buckle down and make the money to pay the bills, right? And I didn't like what I did. But to have a job that you can enjoy and that you get pleasure out of what you do and you feel accomplished and that you're able to enjoy the fruits of your labor, that's what he means by eating and drinking. You're able to provide for your family. You're able to enjoy some of it, maybe take a vacation every now and then. That is a gift from God. So that's something we should think about as we go forward. And the next chapters, he's going to dive into more of this in detail. But the point here is, he's tried everything earthly and found no enjoyment. And at the end of the day, he says, well, all I've got is to enjoy the work that I do while I've got it, because it's going to go away. And that's it. So that's where we're going to stop. There's more coming. Go ahead.
I would like to add, if I may, that's one of the things that is so great from God, is that we get to enjoy in our labor, that we get to work for our wages, we get to enjoy whatever we create or whatever we do, and then it extends, you have that extension about how bad theft is. Because if it's from the hand of God that you are receiving what you have worked for, then whoever the thief is stealing, is taking something that essentially God has blessed you with.
Yeah, and there's also the notion of if what you receive from your labor is basically what you've invested your life in, then effectively they're stealing your life. Right? That's a good point. All right. Well, let's go ahead and go on with Dan's lesson here.